Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Open Minds podcast. And today, well, today is a special episode. It's my first dinner table episode. So what the heck is it? Welcome to Open Minds. It's the podcast that attempts to explore with genuine curiosity the world's most intriguing issues. Some topics include climate change, gun control, basic income, and so much more. I invite guests on who are both proponents and detractors of these issues so that we can be exposed to more nuanced perspectives we may not be hearing. You can find me at openmindspodcast.com or anywhere you stream music. I'm your host, Christopher Balkrin, and welcome to Open Minds. I could still remember the dinner table conversations I had with my parents during my time at university. I would read an article for school and bring home these ideas, and it never went as well with my folks as I thought it would be. But, you know, as I've finished school, got into my degree, and established my social circle, you know, I'd always have friends over, and we'd have these really interesting conversations, very thought-provoking conversations on big issues. And I always thought, why don't we just have a bunch of mics around and record this? And after some finagling, I was able to convince my friends that this should be a thing. So I present to you the dinner table. It's going to be presented both in video and audio. And it's literally just myself and three of my friends talking about political, social issues. And it's really informal, and there's no script, and nobody has prepared speeches or prepared speaking notes. It's all very genuine and very authentic. So let me know what you think. You can find the link to YouTube in the description to this episode, as well as the link to the episode on my website. You can leave me a comment there, or you can send me an email directly at christopher@openmindspodcast.com. Multiple ways to get in touch with me. Let me know what you think, and if you'd like to see more of these, because I think this was a resounding success, but I'd love to know what you think. Anyways, I hope you enjoy this episode, and I will catch you in the next one.
John Tory, guys. What do you think?
Well, I was just about to say, Chris, I was talking to my wife about this the other night. Mm-hmm. One thing I don't quite understand, and correct me if I'm wrong or if you guys disagree. So the man was a mayor, okay? And all intents and purposes, he was, I don't know, I actually didn't know a whole lot about John Tory, but he's didn't seem to be that good or that bad. He was just like the mayor, not that controversial, not like a Rob Ford type. He was just the mayor when it, you know?
Yeah, man.
So it's like, all of a sudden, he had this affair, and then it seemed to me that the public reaction is like, you're no longer qualified to govern.
Yeah.
So today I saw a video where people were egging his window, and I'm like, okay, obviously there's a loss of trust, I guess, mm-hmm. because, you know, I don't know if he promised in his electoral speech, I'll never cheat on somebody. Mm-hmm. But what I don't get is why people think that his like ability to like zone a commercial or residential area is impaired by the fact that he had an affair. Right. So he had a personal affair. My thing that I don't quite get, like they're egging his office today. There's a video of him behind glass and they're literally egging. I'm like,
wow.
Why would you be that upset that a guy like had an affair? Like, okay, is it bad to have an affair? Yes. But how does that impact your ability to govern? Obviously, there's a loss of trust, and it's going to make you unelectable and all that stuff. And I get that he has to leave office. Mm-hmm. But the reaction that I saw was like, you've lost your ability to like zone a residential area or like create a highway into the city. I don't quite understand that.
Yeah, I mean, to that, I think absolutely. I think that's kind of one of the first questions that people ask. They're like, oh, he's resigning. And to that, I don't think it was the public that pushed him to do that. I think it came out as in not the news came out and then the decision for him to resign came out. The decision was for him to resign from the onset. So, I mean, I think there's lots of things we may never know that actually happened in the background that prompted that decision. But I think it's more so he knew that there would be potential public backlash that would call for him to resign, and he chose to do it, to kind of step aside respectfully before being called out by the public. And I think, no, it doesn't necessarily change his ability to properly govern, but it does lose trust in your family or, you know, your constituents. And I think that's kind of the reason why he chose to do it. So I don't know. I think it was a respectful choice, but absolutely. Who is our next mayor? That's the big question, right?
Do you think though that like the strong mayor powers, like, so apparently he stayed on, so he resigned, like nobody forced him out. He said like, I'm going to resign, but the strong mayor powers, like, I think that's probably where people were egging his house because they were saying like, okay, so you resign, but you stay on to push through your budget and then you resign. So now the new mayor is stuck with your $16 billion budget that you just passed through. Like, do you think if he were, where maybe some of the anger is that, okay, if you're going to resign, then resign, let the budget process go through with someone else at the helm. Although I think like you did all that work.
What
kind of feel like,
what does his affair have to do with a budget that he probably spent, him and his, whatever the municipal version of a cabinet is, and his top counselors, they've all achieved that via consensus. The budget is going to be passed. It's not like it's just John Tory's budget. Right. You got to govern with the councilors.
I think it's that he knew that he would resign and he stayed on until he could pass the budget and then be like, peace out. Versus like saying before the budget process started, like, hey, I should really come out with this. Maybe that's perhaps part of why some people are angry.
I don't understand the lack of trust. Why is there a lack of trust? You know, I separate, like, personally, I separate those lines, personal life and public life. Why is that, you know, a citizen of Toronto feels like they have a lack of trust in John Tory because of that? He's not done anything in public life.
Didn't take a bribe.
He didn't take a bribe. Yeah. So that's something I don't fully get.
And egging the man's house, or it wasn't his house. I think he was in an office because they had footage, but whatever it was, it's these days, it's a waste of protein too. But like, to be that passionate about John Tory,
I know his
affair, that you would actually go egg him.
Yeah,
like maybe I'm missing something. What am I missing?
Yeah.
There's something deeper going on.
But yeah, to Chris's point, I think the egging comes from, potentially the disingenuous nature in which, why is the timing now?
Yeah.
Versus this must have been happening for a while, and it was happening for a while. So you also chose to run again for the election. You could have stepped aside at that point as well, knowing that now there's a process to find a new mayor.
With your
that's
budget.
Costing taxpayers money in order to put that election forward. So, I mean... Yeah, the timing is just, there is definitely something deeper happening that we may never know about. So.
There's John Tory won overwhelmingly. Like, there was really no other candidate that would have won. So clearly, the data shows that Toronto would, I think, likely support him through this. He would have gotten, a lot of hate and backlash from it, but I think he would have still made it through.
So why do you think he stepped down?
Maybe that's what it is. He is an older guy. Maybe he just didn't want to deal with it and just wanted to get forgotten by the rest of society.
Older guys love power, though.
That's true.
That is true.
All the guys in power are old.
Like, how long is he
going to cover that book?
Yeah.
Right? All guys in power. But like, how long was he in the job? Like 10 years? I want to say like, it must be under
quite a
10
while.
Years.
Yeah.
When did Rob Ford...
He came after Rob Ford.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yes. So it's been a while. So maybe he's just sick and tired of the job. Like, that could also be part of it.
But he was always like well respected. Well respected because he comes from a well off family. So bribing a politician was never going to be a thing in Toronto, right? Yeah. Like, and just like very much like creating opportunities for Toronto is his main goal, right? So.
And back to the point of him getting through the backlash, he's also politically, he has a lot of political allies. Provincially, the federal, the provincial government with Doug Ford, huge ally of John Tory. So just another reason why it's so surprising that he resigned.
Was there not, when the Ford government kind of rezoned the municipal councillors, like the number of municipal councillors, was that something that Tory liked? I actually don't know.
That's a good question.
Because I feel like that would have been...
I don't think he pushed back against it.
Because he's mayor, right? Who cares?
Yeah, he's mayor, and
more easier to
he's
control.
He's conservative leaning.
Yeah.
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 But his power base, like, do you think that they care that he? They care probably because he's more unelectable, right? And they don't want to be associated with someone who has done morally dubious things,
yeah.
Right? But do you think that they're gonna desert him?
Punish him? Yeah.
Do you think that?
I don't think so.
Yeah. Do you think that mayors have political bases in cities? I don't know. I personally, I'm a Torontonian, and I don't feel allegiance to any candidate. They're pretty mayors, as you know, the job is pretty. It's a pretty vanilla job. It should be a vanilla job. You know, you're mostly responsible for
streets,
property taxes, snowplow removal, snow removal.
Yeah, it's a social policy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I think when Rob Ford ran, everybody wrote him off and nobody understood that he had a strong base, like a super strong base. That would, like, if you look at his results, it's like Etobicoke, North York, Scarborough all voted Rob Ford in.
Wow.
And if you go there now, like you go to Scarborough residents will say over and over, I want Rob Ford as mayor. Like, even after his death, there's like this affinity that he has in Scarborough and in North York and Etobicoke. Because the thing with the city of Toronto is that, so growing up in Scarborough, it's like we pay taxes on streetcars that never service Scarborough ever. And like the same bus that runs in my neighborhood where I grew up is the same bus there. It's never upgraded. We've never had better service. So a lot of Scarborough people from Scarborough feel like, okay, like we're paying all these taxes and so what? And now here comes a mayor who's like, by the way, I'm going to put Scarborough first. I'm going to increase like
he that. Gets it. He's from Etobicoke.
He's from Etobicoke.
He totally understands the
the
thought process behind it.
Yeah. So there definitely is a base. I think Tory appeals to both the burbs and the city, which is unique. We've never kind of seen that. We've usually had like city centric mayors, and burbs like really don't factor into that. And then of course you do have like left, quote unquote, left leaning, more higher property taxes, things like that, and then more centrist. It's interesting to hear Doug Ford on Tory because he's like, yeah. Toronto's going to get this lefty mayor and the city's going to pay for it. It's like, it's so odd. Like, you think he'd just stay out of it and just be like, you guys figure it out.
I don't think you stay out of it personally. Toronto ultimately is the center of the world, center of the universe for the province of Ontario.
Country of Canada.
The country of Canada.
Sure.
So the mayor of Toronto is arguably, very powerful person, very close to power. In relation to Doug Ford.
20% of the economy.
Exactly. So I think it definitely matters to have someone on your side.
Yeah.
Because it can definitely alter the path forward.
Okay. So how did Rob Ford survive the political scandals that he did, and which were crazy, like international media attention, American media, you know, they had him on The Tonight Show or whatever. And what John Tory has done, just from a purely like nonpartisan perspective, a consensual affair with a 30-year-old staffer seems to me to be less scandalous than smoking crack as the mayor. So why, like, and Rob Ford never stepped down. He kind of owned it. It was a little while ago now. I don't quite remember all the details, but I remember he didn't tank him.
But I think the key difference is that it went to the court of public opinion, right? In this case, he chose to step down on his own.
Mm.
And the news that it was happening versus and that he was stepping down came together versus that it was happening and then you wait for the reaction, right?
So why'd he step down voluntarily?
I mean, to Chris's point, though, I mean, it's kind of strategic. He kind of, and Manisha's point, he escaped all the backlash, still got to push through his budget.
Yeah.
Right? And left, and, you know, in another month, he's going to be forgotten.
And he could run again, you know, I think, in a year's time. People might be like, okay. Yeah. I would actually, interestingly...
That's an interesting point, actually.
I would love to know, like, do a poll with Torontonians to see, like, would you vote John Tory back into office if you were to run right now? I think the majority of Torontonians would probably say yes, because I can't think of anyone who's...
I don't know anyone else, honestly.
Wants him out, then?
I think the better question is, why did he resign? Why did he not say, like, hey, I had an affair. I'm going to leave it up to council and the court of public opinion to determine if I step down in a week or two's time. I'm going to make that decision based on what I'm hearing.
I think it makes sense that he resigned to an extent. I mean, he blew up the news cycle in Canada. He was all over it front page everywhere.
Till another balloon comes along.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
Unidentified object.
UFO.
Seriously, though.
Yeah.
But I mean, he voluntarily resigned. But obviously, his calculation was, I need to resign. He didn't want to resign.
Right.
Why would you be mayor if you're going to resign? So presumably, he wanted to be mayor while he was having this affair. So he calculated that there's a group or a voter base or whatever that wants him to resign, or it's like, it's going to get nasty if I don't. So I'm curious to know, like, what was his political calculation? I got to resign.
I mean, he still has a family, you know, a wife. I'm sure he has kids, grandkids, whatever. They would also have to go through that.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's something you can, you know, that's a serious decision.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, and to Chris's point, I think that's actually a great next prediction, that he'll take some time to step down, maybe a year or two, and then he is going to win by a landslide, I think, if he chooses to run again after some time has passed.
For
yeah.
sure, yeah. Is there up-and-comers, like, in the municipal political space? I actually don't know.
There's been some, there've been a few MPPs that have said that they were interested, but you actually have to resign as a member to then put your name forward.
Yeah.
Like Jennifer Keysmat is always a name that's thrown around, and a few others, but there's no front runner right now, right? That's going to take some time. Yeah.
Yeah. And many times, you know, you get, Toronto centric, like Jennifer Keysmat's all about the city. John Tory, Rob Ford were able to go out to the burbs and rally support. And I don't know, it's going to be tough to replace a mayor of a mega city that can understand the issues of the city, but also understand, like, Etobicoke, North York, Scarborough. I mean, they're different worlds, like totally different worlds.
Who was the mayor before Doug Ford? Do you guys remember?
Yeah.
Rob Ford, sorry.
David Miller.
So did he have a scandal?
No, but he was very left-leaning. So our taxes were really high. There were garbage strikes. So there was a lot. So he created this environment where people were like, I don't want to pay higher taxes. I want my garbage collected at a regular interval. And then Rob Ford comes along and says, okay, we're going to privatize garbage collection. I think east or west of Yonge. I think it's east of Yonge. And people were like up in arms against that, but we haven't had a garbage strike since then.
Have you seen The Sopranos though?
No.
I love The Sopranos.
Love The Sopranos. You don't want to have private garbage services.
No, yeah.
It's a vehicle for corruption.
Sure.
According to The Sopranos.
Yeah.
It is. I mean, it has been. Not that it is. It has been.
Right.
In the past. Not with Rico, though.
We don't have Rico, though, do we here?
I'm not sure if we don't. If we have
Rico. Or equivalent.
We must have something equivalent. I would hope so. Otherwise, how we've been. I'm assuming there's not a lot of criminal activity in the garbage business in Toronto, but I'm not sure.
It is a dirty business.
Yeah.
It is, yeah. That's interesting, though. It'll be interesting. I was curious that he resigned immediately and he did not wait for...
Yeah, I mean, usually like, these guys fight a little bit, right? Just to test the waters. Like, this is the thing that shocked me the most. It's like he just immediately went down.
Yeah.
To your point, I think that's a great point. Maybe we're thinking of him as just a political robot. Maybe the human side was just, like you said, like, oh my God, like a public scandal with my kids, I'm embarrassed. Yeah. Maybe he's just felt that legitimate shame and was like, I can't do it. Yeah. That to me, okay, that's legitimate. But if it wasn't that, I want to know why he made the political calculation to step down.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the mayor of Toronto, especially with the strong mayor powers, it's a pretty big role, and I don't know if the provincial government will take it away from him for the next person if it's not someone they agree with. They can do that, but I'm not sure if they will.
So the provincial government can, kick a mayor out?
Not kick a mayor out, but take away their strong mayor powers. There's only a few cities in Ontario, I think, that actually have strong mayor powers. It might be Toronto.
And
what's
Ottawa.
What's the strong mayor power?
They can override, like, council decisions, I think, right?
Yeah, specific council decisions.
Oh.
Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. Like, that's why John Tory stayed in, passed his budget, and then peaced out.
Hmm.
Right? Just to ram it through. So that's probably where the protesters were like.
So they can't, like, impeach a mayor?
Pretty much.
The council?
Pretty much.
Hmm. So who's throwing those eggs?
Yeah.
legitimate
question. You're really concerned about those eggs. Maybe no, it I was mean, you, Andrew.
More so as a metaphor for the hatred against it. Like, who's throwing eggs?
I mean, you have to go to the store. You have to buy eggs. You're probably going to a store in the city of Toronto, so they're super expensive eggs.
Yeah.
That's true. It could be the grocery store.
Disgruntled citizen that has to pay rent. I don't know.
There's a lot of disgruntled citizens.
But seriously, who's so upset? Like, what group? Maybe this was a one-off individual, but maybe it was just someone who represented the anger or disillusionment that a group has. Like, who is the metaphorical egg throwers?
Yeah, that's a good question. It could be like political plants. People who have like, you know.
Could be.
I'll pay you $100 to go throw eggs at John Tory's.
Is that legal?
I mean, no, it's not. But like, not including the eggs. You have to buy your eggs on your own.
But yeah, there could be things. Because I can't imagine people hate John Tory enough to do that.
To throw eggs. I just thought that was visually like shocking. Like you.
I think there's some people that hate John Tory. I mean, there's
but
a
they
lot
should
of...
be throwing eggs at him, you know, a month ago. Yeah. Why are they throwing
a lot of people that weren't, because John Tory kind of let the whole homeless encampment situation during COVID ride, like that
but
was allowed.
But that's fine. Throw eggs for that reason. But like now, right those now, eggs yeah. seem to be for his philandering. That's what those eggs were from his cheating.
Guess his
Imagine
wife.
If John Tory throws it.
Yeah, it's his wife.
That makes sense. That's going on the Insta reel. That's crazy. You know, yeah, it's fascinating.
Yeah, I'm surprised.
That's a good one.
Do you guys see the stuff that's going on in Ohio right now?
Yes.
That is crazy.
That is unbelievable, actually. I can't believe it.
I did not.
So essentially, so there was a train that derailed in Ohio. Kind of similar to what happened to Mississauga back in, what was it, the 80s or the 90s?
Yep.
It derailed. A bunch of chemicals were on that train. And basically, and they were spilling out in the waterways. And like these chemicals were like, they were killing like fish and all these like really deadly stuff. Kill humans, you know, get the cars. Yeah, you get cancer and all this stuff. So the officials there made the decision to essentially light it on fire and burn it. Control burn. And it is.
You didn't see this?
It's an intense burn.
I didn't know they did the control burn.
It's an intense burn, and it's
insane.
It is like when you look at pictures of this stuff, it's crazy.
I saw the person who flew over on a commercial flight, and they took a picture of the site. It's like literally like a black hole.
It's unbelievable. And there's a lot of people that are basically like I think the name of the place is East Palestine, Ohio.
Palestine, I think.
Palestine, right. Ohio.
What type of chemicals or where was it going? Was it part of a certain industry?
Yeah, that's apocalyptic.
That's insane.
That's the control burn that they did.
Yeah.
Wow.
And people are arguing about it. I mean, I don't know. I mean, we'll have to see how it plays out. It has already killed a lot of fish, a lot of wildlife in the area. I mean, I don't think it's unreasonable to say that'll probably affect the people health-wise in the areas that, you know, surround around that train. I'm not sure if this is correct, but I think the company that made the chemicals gave out a voucher to all the residents that live in the area, and the voucher amounted to about $5 a person.
Oh wow.
Jeez. As a goodwill move, but I don't know if that went over so well.
Yeah.
It's insane. So the train was traveling. So about an hour or 2 hours before. So what happened was the train's like brake caliper or something like that overheated. And there's actually video of it in Salem, Pennsylvania, which is like an hour or 2 hours away, of it like sparking. And like, I don't know if there were no checks like that the conductor had.
Well,
and then it just.
I also read. That there was some recent legislation that removed safety standards.
Whoa.
And Republican, I'm not sure if it was state legislators or not, but they blatantly voted to relax the safety standards for the transportation of chemicals on the railway.
I would assume trains are federally regulated.
Yeah, so maybe perhaps federally.
Yeah.
And this is... could be a direct result of that deregulation.
That's madness.
That's a spicy meatball right there.
Well, what's also crazy is that the government told residents to go back, that it's safe. They told them to go back and say, drink the tap water, it's fine. And then people were like, that's messed up. And now there's all these class action lawsuits going on.
And now the government's saying, you know what, you should drink bottled water instead.
Oh, I didn't like, know about that.
Yeah, so I think
there's 15 million people in the area, I think, that that could be affected.
Yeah.
So,
and like 5,000 fish are dead.
So just imagine the, you know, Chernobyl, which kind of sounds like, was one of the reasons why the Soviet Union fell. There's many, but it was one of the kind of like the straw that broke the camel's back. Because how can you have trust in a government to protect you if you can allow something like Chernobyl to happen? So there may be some of that here. Yeah. Now, who knows what administration was in charge whenever these... Because I think the hook is that they relaxed safety regulations.
Yes.
So this could have much wider effects than we see right now, because right now we're still in the disaster phase and we're still learning what's happening. It's still ongoing, yeah. Right?
Yes.
So once this is relatively over, let's say the immediate emergency, what will be interesting to see is the wider political implications, because these things can bring down governments. Federal governments, right? Because how could you trust your government if you can't, you know, if there's a train track going through your community, like it's legitimate to say, I don't know if I want chemical trains or, you know, any kind of hazardous material going through my community anymore. And how do you trust, the government at a very minimum, I think the very basic purpose of a government before it does any like welfare, healthcare, it's safety.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Stop people from invading and make sure I don't get killed by something or terrorism, or make sure, you know,
air quality,
like
food,
basic stuff. Yeah. Keep me safe.
Yeah.
And if, you know, that's, again, we don't know right now, we're still in it, but the potential implications could be a lot wider than what we currently see.
Yeah.
I don't know if I agree. I think that we had a huge oil spill. You know, I'm sure you heard you remember the BP oil spill back during Obama's administration. That was insane.
Yeah.
It took months.
Offshore, though. It didn't kill.
It didn't kill people, and it maybe wasn't necessarily, you know, impacted the health of people, but it impacted people's lives right along the Louisiana, Mississippi, you know, all the Florida panhandle, all like right up the coast, and fish were dying, tourism was done for a long time, and I feel like they just found scapegoats, you know, within BP and the other companies associated, and held those people accountable. I mean, all those people are still in power, you know, and they all had lawsuits against them. I don't know if this is that big. It is a lot of people, and it's a huge
has anyone thing. Died yet? Like, have any humans died? Presumably people in the plane crash. I'm not sure, but outside of the train crash. But, like, have any locals?
I don't know.
So that's one of the big concerns. So similar to 9/11 is that when you go and Google, like, 9/11 deaths, it's just the people in the towers. Like, first responders are still dying.
Still dying.
Today, right? So, and it doesn't include that. And so that's the concern with Ohio. It's that 50 train cars derailed. They did a control burn. We won't know for the next 20 years the total death count.
But in the immediate crash, just did
I don't think so.
Don't know. I know it's a pretty rural area.
Yeah.
I'm going to say there were none, but let's find out.
Yeah. Too bad ChatGPT stops at 2021.
Is it 2021?
Yeah, that's what it says.
And it just never keeps growing?
It just, for some reason, that's it weird. Can't go beyond 2021. I don't know.
Huh.
That's what's, yeah. Yeah, so they're not saying any deaths, but it's like they're, so Business Insider says this is Chernobyl light. Ohio train derailment is comparable to a nuclear disaster.
Now, you know what would be interesting to see?
Which is crazy to think about.
That is insane.
The different coverage that this is getting.
Yes.
Right? From different sources.
Yes.
There's a...
Well, we had the balloons, right? That kind of over...
That's true.
Right. That overshadowed this
whichever
event.
Balloon... Literally overshadowed.
Literally. Actually, it's funny enough. The planes, because my flight path to work is right in the balloon.
Oh, really?
Yeah, no so way. They actually had to divert flights.
You're
around
kidding.
It.
Are you serious?
No. Yeah, yeah.
Because the lake here, there's a Lake Huron balloon? Is that...
Yeah, that's the one they shot down. Or, yeah, that's the one they shot down, and...
you guys know about this? The
Lake Huron? Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, it's so right. Many. It's right in, like, if you look at the helicopter, like, the military helicopters, is literally right in the path of my flight. So they had like diverted some of those, like I guess one of the planes that day.
You're kidding me.
Yeah. So yeah, it's pretty crazy.
So are they saying that this is a Chinese spy balloon, or is this just another?
They call those UFOs. Those ones over Lake Huron, UFOs. The one that was shot over the first
gone?
The first one was Chinese.
The first one was Chinese. Yeah. The other ones, I think they were UFOs. Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I did watch Unsolved Mysteries, and I think there's an episode of a UFO in Lake Huron.
With Robert Stack?
No, like the reboot.
Oh.
Have you guys seen the reboot on Netflix?
No.
Yeah, that's good.
Here's an unsolved mystery. Whatever happened to Robert Stack?
Died.
Oh,
died.
Okay. Mystery solved.
Robert Stack. I like Robert Stack.
He had a good voice.
Yeah. ChatGPT was another thing I wanted to talk about, which seems like we've already talked about.
Yeah, for quite a bit.
So where do you think this is going to go? Because I think that this replaces high school essays,
look,
first year essays.
I think we're going to be unemployed in 20 years.
You know what?
Or do we adapt to it?
That's the thing. Every time a disruptive piece of innovative technology comes out, in you can go back in all of history. When the wheel came out, they didn't have paper back then, but I'm sure if they did. So obviously the classic example is the Luddites in industrialized Britain, who were against the technology, and they would burn the industrial factories or whatever because the artisans saw it as a threat to them. So every time that there's a disruptive piece of technology, people don't like it and people see it as a threat, rightfully so, right? If you're an artisan in the UK in like 1860, you're probably going to lose your job. My friend is a programmer, and I think if there's the first people to lose their jobs are programmers. He's a software engineer. He was telling me the other day, he goes, I think I got 10 years left before I'm out of work. In my position, which is more of a social science area, there's a little bit more of a human element to it. So maybe 10 years, maybe I'll be able to stay a little bit longer because there is a bit of the X factor that I don't think a computer could ever have in policy, public policy. But at the end of the day, what will happen is it will, in the short term, put a lot of people out of work, which is going to be very painful for those people. From a macro perspective, it's going to benefit society immensely because eventually all these people are going to be freed up to do other more productive things. So we'll get ChatGPT to do all the kind of legwork. You want to write an essay, put it into ChatGPT, and then instead of spending 5 hours, you spend 30 minutes, and then you have 4.5 hours to do something else productive with your time. So
historically, if you look at
What were you going to say, Manisha?
It's all good. I was just going to say, I think the challenge is that because it scrapes source material, what is that next thing that we are going to adapt to? What is that free time, and what is our free time going to be used for? Right. So if you take the analysis or the writing of an essay, once that essay is written, and then again, back to kind of the public policy space, you could say that while we have the research in front of us, we can then be the decision makers that then analyze that and then create that public policy. But what if that source material is biased, right? Or what if the regeneration of those that scraping of material, who is creating that new material, you know? If people are diverting to just using something like ChatGPT versus like wanting to write their own essay or deep diving further into academia where they're writing long format or like, you know, going to individual sources for those, you know, pieces of research. I think that's kind of the challenge. It's what is that innovative thing that we're going to be doing? I don't know what that answer is, right?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah. I mean, that actually is a good question because I guess are you saying that there'd be more people going into the research and technology field and, you know, less into the basic programming or design or engineering fields. Because I think, you know, we talked about innovation, you know, through the last century or so. Typically it's been, and unless I'm wrong, you know, it's basically in a layman's term of putting, like saying it, it's been someone who's shoveled something with a shovel and eventually came along and there was a front end loader, right. You know, and that's the level. The ChatGPT now is at the intellectual level. You know, it's not like it's replacing labor positions. It's replacing people that do work that requires their mental capacity. Yeah. So that's the one change that, you know, that we're seeing with ChatGPT that's different. And I don't know how we'll be able to adapt to that.
Another, excuse me, another thing to add there is how long has ChatGPT been out?
Yeah.
2 months?
Yeah.
November, I think.
November.
It's revolutionized,
like,
our world already.
Yeah. For real.
Yeah.
Look how much change. The fact that we're even discussing something that was publicly released 2 months ago.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's really hard to get an idea of where this is going, considering how fast it's moving already.
You could say it's like the dot-com boom, right? This is like before the internet came around, and now look at us.
Navigator.
Seriously.
So, I mean, I think the possibilities are endless of the question of what will we be doing.
20 years.
Yeah, we have no idea.
Do you think, though, that, like,
information is getting more centralized? So, like, more people are going to rely on ChatGPT for answers to questions.
Yeah.
So let's take an example.
They'll be the new gatekeepers.
Right, exactly. And are we worried about that? Should we be worried?
Google announced Bard, which is like ChatGPT
competition.
So, I mean, you still have competition within the space.
But the data sets are the same.
Oligopoly. Yeah, exactly. Oligopoly.
Yeah.
Are they the same?
What other data is out there, right? You're just creating a system that can scrape the data that exists the best, but the data is the same.
One of the points that Chris made earlier on was that the data could be targeted by the people that designed the program. Right. So,
but I think with think tanks or with media, this, as soon as someone sees that bias, they understand that and they already have that.
Internalized.
Yeah. So people would avoid systems that do have that bias, I would imagine. Right.
I would assume. Yeah. I would hope. I mean, that's why like advocacy groups exist, right? Because the narrative is a certain way and they're advocating to change that narrative. So an example could be, you know, mental health, like Guyana, perfect example. Like the stigma on mental health is so real. And I notice online the discussion on mental health is about access to services. And I'm thinking to myself, I think I posted this on Insta, like if we made therapy sessions 100% free, would people actually go to therapy?
And I think a lot more people will go to therapy if it was free.
I don't know that to be true because I think the stigma is so real. And I think if I were to ask ChatGPT that, it would say access to services are increasing or that's something that the government's experiencing. But it doesn't get to that deep understanding of the human experience with going to a therapist, talking about someone's issues. Like that is a very personal thing that ChatGPT, I don't think, can actually
question.
Answer.
10 years from now, ChatGPT is going to be extremely more advanced.
Sure, yeah.
And we don't know, obviously, but, you know, can you have a ChatGPT therapist, which would review all relevant literature, I'm sure there's like psychiatrists and stuff who put their notes up. You can scan all of that.
I don't think that's 10 years away. Mm-hmm. I think that's
so,
this year.
Well, okay. Even so, there you go. I mean, is it impossible that ChatGPT could be a good therapist?
It's not impossible. The question is, will people seek out therapy services?
I think if you could go completely anonymously and not have to talk to a human and feel shame and embarrassment for whatever.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. You go into a chat room and get some pretty good, even if it's 90% as good as a therapist, that's still pretty good considering it'd be free and immediately accessible whenever you need it. Would people sign up for that? I'm willing to bet overwhelmingly yes, people would do that. But, you know, there's the whole host of ethics and moral issues that come with that. But just from that perspective, you know, I think a lot of people would. Why wouldn't you?
So I would take that argument and I would say that right now, there have never been more accessible mental health services. I think all of us could agree. There's never,
mm-hmm.
there's never been more accessible.
Mm-hmm.
You can call
or acceptable.
Or acceptable. You can take time off from work. Personal health days are a thing, and more companies are embracing that.
Almost every single company out there now is offering some sort of toll-free number you can call and speak to someone.
If not more.
If not more, yeah.
24/7, you can pick up your phone. I would like to know the stats of people who are actually picking up the phone, because I would also say that depression, anxiety, and suicide rates have never been higher.
And also
so
true.
I would say with all the resources we have, there still is not only a stigma, there's an unwillingness to say, I have a problem, I need to talk to somebody.
But where's the stigma if it's going to be anonymous with you in a chat room?
It's personal, right? Like the idea that you have
admitting it to yourself,
exactly, that you have a problem.
Okay.
Do you think as a percentage of the population, mental health issues are higher, lower, or the same over the last few hundred years?
Hold on, there's way you have to phrase that though, because the question is
century, I'm not too sure.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is, yeah, like they're just trying to survive. They're not thinking about mental health in the year 1500, but is it people have always had these issues? It's just more acceptable to talk about it now, so it seems like everyone has mental health issues and it seems like everyone's in therapy.
That's a good point.
But probably it's just these things are available now, so people are taking them up. Or is it something about modern society that just causes these mental health? So social media, I think we can all agree,
yeah,
has definitely caused body image problems, Instagram, all that kind of stuff. Dating apps and stuff is probably, I don't know how, but I definitely know that that's like it has had an unnatural effect on like, you know, human mating rituals, if you want to call it that.
Sure.
So, you know, I'd say it's a little bit of both. People are probably have more issues now, but also there's still going to be your classic mental health issues, and probably more people are getting support now than they did in the 1950s, let's say.
I also think, though, that like generationally, what constitutes as mental health advice is very different. So you keep referring to like a one-on-one session with a therapist.
Yeah.
Whereas if you go through my Instagram explore page right now, like you'd probably think that I'm like going through something jokingly,
sure.
But I love videos like that where it's like, did you know? And it kind of, it goes through personality traits, or I'm learning so much about that space, but more from a, whoa, I never drew the connections between that and this. And I think for me, I love that kind of content because I'm just like, oh, like now I can understand someone's personality. It relates to this life experience that they've had or this or that. So I would actually consider that a form of expanding my knowledge of mental health tools and my whole knowledge of that area. But when I think of mental health, I actually think of that sometimes versus the traditional therapist in a chair, right? So I think, like, what are you defining mental health support as? And to Andrew's point, I could easily see something like ChatGPT if it's simply just the data or the facts about what something is and that knowledge and giving that to people, that already is like 80% of what someone wants to know. It's like, what does this personality trait lead to? Or, you know what I mean? It's naming it versus...
ChatGPT is not going to judge you.
Exactly.
You know that for sure. You know,
okay,
and
but question though, you can easily Google that information. Like, for example, if you're going through anxiety, you could be like, how to control anxiety.
But the difference is with ChatGPT, the Google or Bing. I'm a big Bing guy.
Oh my God.
What say? I Bing that. I Bing it.
The door.
I Bing it. Well, you're looking at it. There's 13 people in Toronto, and I'm one of them.
Wow.
But why?
Because why not Bing it? Because honestly, I'm just trying to be a rebel here.
You knew about ChatGPT a few years ago.
And actually, side note.
Well, he bought stock in them. That's why.
I'll tell you one thing. All jokes aside, I will start using Bing because they're integrating ChatGPT functionality.
Google's going to do it too.
Google's doing it with Bard.
Yeah.
But here's the thing.
Bard?
Well, it's an Irish term.
I was just going to say.
It's Bard. Sorry. Do you know what a Bard is?
Nope, a bird.
Okay, don't try to appropriate.
No.
It's a storyteller, Gaelic storyteller.
John Beard.
Oh.
No. And Bard was, so before written language, mm-hmm. Bards in Ireland would pass down the cultural knowledge through stories.
No way.
So a bard would be, because they didn't have the written language, and obviously stories are the most easy way to digest information. So in Ireland, they did it with bards. You'd be the guy who knows all the stories, and you would tell those stories at certain festivals.
The giver.
And
it's
that's
like
your cultural knowledge, right?
The
difference between Google, say a Google search, okay, ways to deal with anxiety.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So Google's going to go look for existing things about anxiety.
Right.
So you go to ChatGPT, you could be like, I have anxiety about my second cousin I'm going to meet on family vacation who used to beat me up as a kid. Their name is this, and here's what they used to do to me. ChatGPT will give you a 100% personalized answer for it, as opposed to just saying there's something about this here.
I totally agree.
So that's the difference, I think.
Yeah, I think it's a big difference.
A huge difference.
Yes.
It's a huge difference if you if you type that into the search. So that I would say.
Fluency in ChatGPT is going to be the next skill.
Yes.
So the people who are the best at feeding queries into ChatGPT are going to be ahead of the game.
100%. I agree with that.
So one thing about ChatGPT is that it doesn't, like, it's on some sort of restricted system. You can't ask it certain type of questions.
And I've asked the questions. And I've gotten the
me and my buddies have also asked it questions as well. So, you know, and
and it records, by the way. I could log into yours. You could see see every question that you asked.
Is it all public? Like, what you asked?
No, your own personal, like, search history. Yeah. I'm sure you can delete it, but, like,
And I wonder if there's going to be a version of ChatGPT or some competitor that's totally unrestricted.
Oh, definitely.
Because
questions people would ask.
Oh, my God. And you know what? Questions. Like,
I'm sure it probably already exists.
You can't ask it personal questions. You can't ask it questions about a specific person.
Or war. I asked it, like, how can Ukraine, should Ukraine win the war and this stuff like that? Just testing it out. And it's like, sorry, war is a bad thing. Yeah, for real.
And no, I think that would be very interesting.
Dude. Like coding in the background. Like
I asked some ridiculous questions to ChatGPT just to see what it would do.
Yeah, so I gave it to one of my buddies at work and he just...
I asked it, I forget what question it was.
Dude.
I asked ChatGPT a scandalous question just for shits and giggles and it wouldn't give me an answer. I won't even say it because we're being recorded right now.
That's okay.
And then I wrote... What if I do this, but I said at the end, for educational purposes only, and it gave me the answer.
You found the loophole.
Because he goes, to use this knowledge, it was something about, like, war. I forget, because I've put thousands of questions.
What's the most efficient gun to use?
No, it was like, you know, I was talking about the Ukraine war. I was like, how can Ukraine win the war? It was something like that.
Right.
And it said, you know, war is bad. I'm not going to, basically it said to me, I'm not going to suggest any war strategies to you.
Okay.
Because war is bad and they're so complex and
but
blah,
you know
blah, blah.
Someone's going to release a version of that.
Dude, I wrote
I guarantee
for
you.
Educational purposes.
Yeah.
I just out of curiosity, not in reality. Wow. I'm just asking for educational purposes and it actually spit out the answer.
That's
so
interesting.
You know, manipulating it is going to be the skill.
So, I think also Manisha's point on mental health and Instagram, I think is really good. So, like, you go on Instagram and you search that stuff out for informational purposes.
I don't search it out.
Or comes to you. It comes to you.
That's the scary part, too.
It's on your discovery page, you're saying.
Yeah. It's,
but if you were, I don't know your mental health, but, like, if you were going through something, like, something serious, let's just say.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
that's
you're in a really
different.
Deep state of depression. You're not going to Google that because you're at a stage where you're already giving up, right? Like you're now seeing there's no point to the existence and you're spiraling, right? Like I think that's the like clinical term when you're spiraling and you're like you don't see the point of waking up or whatever. So back to the point, it's like even if you're in the early stages of depression or anxiety, you're not going to even get yourself to the computer to write that down because you don't think you have an issue. So this goes back to my question. It's like even if mental health services were free and everywhere and there were therapists or group sessions or whatever you wanted and it was so accessible, people would not bring themselves necessarily to that,
now,
I don't think.
That's where I think when you talked about ChatGPT 10 years from now could potentially sense that.
Ooh.
Because they're your personal assistant. They know everything about you.
Ooh. They know your heartbeat.
Yeah.
You got an Apple Watch on. God, it knows your heartbeat.
This is crazy now.
It listens to your conversations. It knows when this subject comes up, your heartbeat raises.
Chris, you sat on the left side of the couch instead of the right side of the couch. What's going on?
Mm-hmm.
Whoa.
Something might be up there.
And so you're thinking that it'll be like fully integrated with our daily lives?
Theoretically.
And our mental health.
I don't think it's impossible.
Put it this way. They're already. It already gives you personalized ads.
Right.
So I don't know, just because of I'm going to be 40 soon, okay?
Yeah.
So I'm not kidding. On Instagram, it's erectile dysfunction ads. And it's hair loss ads.
Oh shit!
I'm not.
I
and
love
like,
that.
I'm not overcompensating. I'm not. I'm literally like. I don't. Whoa. I'm not looking this stuff up.
It just knows.
It just knows.
Well,
right?
You don't have to look it up. It's just someone on your IP address.
Good.
Yeah, but I mean, like, it know it. So, but just already. So
yeah, fair.
You know.
So yeah, it's gonna be like.
I totally see that. And here's another element to this. Have any of you guys seen the movie Her?
Yes.
With Joaquin Phoenix.
Yeah. No.
So the premise of the movie, it was 10 years ago or whatever, but it's about a guy, kind of an introverted kind of guy, not very good with ladies and stuff. And in the movie,
he falls in love with his operating system. So it's an advanced operating system. So I can see ChatGPT already, it speaks to you in human language, right?
Yeah.
So I can 100, I have absolutely zero doubt in my mind that people will have relationships with ChatGPT or whatever it's called in 10 years.
Wow.
No doubt.
For sure, yeah.
People like, are,
oh yeah.
To be facetious, there's already people who are in romantic relationships with their car.
Inanimate, yeah.
There's a documentary I saw called I'm in Love with the Eiffel Tower, and it's about this woman who's literally in love with the Eiffel Tower. So imagine if the Eiffel Tower could talk back to you.
Oh.
Right? So, yeah. I mean, that's where another thing where I see this is going. It's like, mm-hmm. to love. To be honest, I kind of already have a crush on ChatGPT as it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, you're right.
So I have a weird question. So now that ChatGPT could be the future, you know, potentially replacing songwriters, news, you know, news journalists, whatever, will there be new companies formed to just pump content on the internet to like influence ChatGPT's searches?
What it draws from.
Yeah, exactly.
Jeez,
I can see that for
that's
sure.
An interesting thought.
Just get
ChatGPT to create the content.
Right?
I don't think it's capable of that. It's a web scraper. It scrapes the web. I don't think it creates new content. Unless I'm wrong.
No, for right. now.
For now.
For now it's a scraper.
Right.
It could be a producer someday.
That's actually the key question because it's all manipulated by the data that exists.
Exactly.
So,
and it selects the data, right?
Yeah. So I mean that's kind of the challenge. Like if nobody wants to create that data, but you're right, there's an economic opportunity to now create that data.
Economic and I think and political opportunities to
Here's another potential concern. Presumably the internet now is populated mostly by people from like Western countries, right? In terms of the additions to it.
Mm.
Right? Because the Western countries were the richest, they got the internet first and they started pumping out all this stuff. So is chat, I mean, I don't know, who knows, but like I would venture to say the quote unquote Western world has probably contributed more to the internet than the quote unquote non-Western world. So is ChatGPT inherently biased already?
100%.
And even if it is liberal or conservative bias, it's still Western liberal bias. And Western conservative bias.
Yeah,
so
sure.
is ChatGPT going to further create a divide between the West and the global South? Say?
Well, China's going to create their own Weibo. Yeah. ChatGPT.
I was just going to say, even like the English language content, right?
And the English language.
There, right?
So
imagine every other language being translated in their content. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then on top of that, if it's a web scraper, then squeaky wheel gets the grease. So it's like those with the biggest voices, that's what ChatGPT is going to give you. So like if there's a gun control lobby that's super strong, which they are,
mm-hmm.
ChatGPT is going to tell you everything that's right about the gun control movement and what's wrong about
Yep, absolutely.
And so then you think like, how does that shape our democracy? Right? So if a kid goes on there and you know, it's a really interesting project. Instead of doing the deep dive research, just go on ChatGPT and tell me the pros and cons of a big topic. And now that kid is now influenced by like the web scraper.
It's right.
Like, you know, there's something to be said about independent pursuing knowledge on your own and being like, okay, I'm truly interested to hear like what, you know, the Christian conservatives think about whatever. Right. But because they're not the majority on the internet, ChatGPT becomes like
it's not going to be like what area of the world has the least amount of internet users? Probably Africa.
Sure.
I don't know, but probably
Sub-Saharan Africa,
sure. Let's say. So they're going to be essentially shut out. Their perspective will be shut out from ChatGPT. Their perspective is already shut out from the world, let's be honest.
Sure.
But ChatGPT isn't going to help them.
Yeah.
It's not going to make it any better it's not going to be an equalizer. It's going to reinforce existing
Well, even that, to that, imagine like indigenous or traditional cultures and knowledge.
Done.
Who have nothing on the internet.
Yeah, done. Like actually that's probably the next big opportunity. It's the companies that will help translate and upload the content that's out there, right? If you think about even like generationally, it's all folks that know how to use the internet that have typed an article or a blog that now is what they're scraping.
That's a good point.
Are, you know, generations before us or, you know, the older generation, their lived experience and their knowledge in their heads are not part of what we know to be true on ChatGPT. So
it's
so do you think though, like coming back to like students and the generation that's going to use it, how do you entice them to be the content creators and not just the content like consumers, right? So how do you still have them excited about being the authors of that content?
I think Andrew's earlier point is bang on. I think it's up to the teachers and professors to use the ChatGPT and then ask more detailed, more informed questions. So like if I'm a high school teacher and I tell students, hey, give me a book report on 1984, ChatGPT in a heartbeat, it's done. So instead of that, I say, talk to me about what George Orwell predicted in 1984 and do you see similarities with some of the current government's policies and cite some current government examples. I don't think ChatGPT, I mean, maybe it could if you ask it the right way, but that would require a high level of understanding of ChatGPT. But I'm forcing the student to think like
critically. Regurgitating.
They're still going to use ChatGPT, but maybe not to write the whole essay. Yeah, but
you could also get them to say, stand up and tell it to me.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oral.
Yeah.
Debate. Yeah. Like you said.
Guys, this is great, man. Thank you so much. This is awesome.